I want to play just a short recital tonight of some things from various periods. Someone said to me early in the week, oh, I hope you use the harpsichord. There's a wonderful little harpsichord here at Holden, and it doesn't get used all that much, but it's going to get used tonight. I want to do some music of Johann Sebastian Bach. Three movements from a suite. Bach, in addition to all of the church music that we know about, wrote a great number of works for solo keyboard, and this is from a suite that he wrote for harpsichord, the second English suite. I'm going to play three movements of that, the prelude, and then the very soft, the very slow saraband, and then the bourré. These are all dance movements, not actually meant to be danced to, but sort of a concert version of a dance from the period of Johann Sebastian Bach.
Thank you.
To those of you who've never gotten up close to a harpsichord, please take a moment to do so afterward. The big difference, of course, the harpsichord was what we had in keyboards before we ever had the piano. And the big difference is that the harpsichord strings are plucked with a little plectra rather than struck with a hammer. And so you get that different kind of quality because of that plucking. It's very similar to a string player playing pizzicato. And that section in the middle movement, doing it that way, there's a damper that you can put on the strings so that as soon as they're plucked, the sound stops. It's called a lute stop, and very much like a guitar or a lute stop, and that's what gives you that different kind of quality. I'm going to play a piece of music, an early piece of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, a movement from one of his sonatas, this one in C major, and it's the Rondo. I picked it because it comes not very long after the piano was first started to be in general use. And the piano got its name because it was originally called the piano forte. And that is because those two words in Italian mean soft and loud. And that's what the piano could do. And that was what made it different than the harpsichord. The harpsichord has just basically one dynamic. You can sit there and push down as hard as you want on the keys, but you're not going to get anything louder or softer. It's just going to be that volume that you get. And the piano had this because of the fact that there were hammers hitting the strings, you could control your touch. And so, though they were a bit archaic at first, and perhaps not as refined as we would like, those early pianos, they were called pianofortes. And this piece of Mozart, it's written rather early in his life. He was 21, but he'd already written 300 pieces by that time. This piece of Mozart's was one of his early pieces for the piano forte, and I think you'll hear in it how he loved to go back and forth between soft and loud to demonstrate that idea. It's called a rondo, and the reason it's called that is that in music, whenever you have the word rondo appear, it means that there's an opening theme, and then something else will come, and that opening theme will return. Something different will come in, the opening theme will come. You'll always come back to the opening theme. Some composers can have a rondo and it can be as boring as anything you ever heard because they haven't got anything to say. And then you get someone like Mozart and he had so much to say that it's never a bore to listen to one of his rondos.
Thank you.
skip the Romantic period, and we'll do something at the end, and jump to early 20th century. One of the great pianists, I wish I could have heard him. I have heard all about him, and I've heard him on recording, but I never heard him live. But I am told, and I can hear it in the records, that one of the great pianists we ever had was Percy Grainger. Percy Grainger was the man who received the official nod from Grieg as, this is the one who knows how to play my piano concerto. And Percy Grainger was he just gave himself to music. He was an Australian by birth, but he traveled all around the world giving concerts, did so much for music, and he was especially concerned about folk songs. And he took folk songs and tried to write new arrangements for them, or just any arrangement, and he was so concerned, as many other composers have been, about the traditions of folk songs dying out. He, of course, was very right about the fact that in our own society we find very, very little of original folk songs still being sung, because there aren't any more of these places that are far removed. It would be sort of like if suddenly no one had been there, and suddenly we got to Image Lake and realized there was this whole culture up there, and they had their own folk songs that had been going on. And before, they were sort of bombarded from the outside with radio and phonograph, etc., and got changed. Percy Grainger went around trying to find these folk songs, and he went to some unusual places, some of those islands in the North Atlantic, the Faroe Islands, for example, and found songs, folk songs, and did arrangements. I'd like to play two arrangements tonight of songs of Percy Grainger. They'll both be very familiar, but probably will be a surprise to you that you know them because of Percy Grainger. They were around before Percy Grainger, but it is Percy Grainger who got them in front of the public. Percy Grainger was a man who did everything he could for his family. He had relatives who were not the most scrupulous and who tried to make him feel very badly about the money he earned in recitals. And so he existed as poorly as he possibly could, even to the extent a friend of mine told me about Percy Grainger went to give a recital in one town, and he didn't want to spend the money to have his pants pressed. And so he put them between two mattresses, but he put them the wrong way. And so he came out flapping for the concert and said afterward that perhaps maybe that would be not money that would be misspent if he would do that. He was often tried to not stay in motels, but would just sleep on top of the piano he was practicing on. And, he was quite an unusual fellow, Percy Grainger. And here are two arrangements. The first one, neither of them needs introduction.
Percy Grainger in the 20th century is the... He painstakingly marks every measure. Which notes... If you saw that manuscript for the Londonderry Air, the second number, you'd see that it's all marked, all little teeny notes except for the melody in great big notes. So keep bringing out the melody. And then if he wants other notes, and it says, you know, loud and lots and throw up here, and it's all said, no Italian terms for him. All these very English terms with L-Y endings on every word. Lovingly, you know, bracingly, everything is, you know, it's all very, very picturesque language. Another picturesque composer, a very 20th century one, is a composer whose music I very much enjoy playing. I play a lot of it on the organ and some of it on the piano. He's written more for organ, and this is the French composer, Olivier Messiaen. Messiaen is like no other. There are many composers who are writing today that you say, well, that sounds like, and you can name people that have composed before them who they sound like. And then there are a few folk in the world like Messiaen, and you say, that sounds like Messiaen. I mean, doesn't sound like anybody else. He wrote a piece that has remained, since it was written 30 years ago, as one of the great tour de forces for solo piano. Messiaen is a deeply religious man. Every piece of music that he writes has, for him, very spiritual connotations. And though those who are not, who do not embrace the idea of a belief in God, and who come upon his music, as I've known people to do, and to scoff and say, oh, this is all just picturesque and being very silly, it's not for Messiaen. Messiaen is very sincere and very deeply concerned about how he sets this music for piano or for anything he's writing for. What I'd like to play for you is the first movement of 20 movements. This is a piece called 20 Glances at the Baby Jesus. And it's about an hour and a half uncut. But we're cutting it because we're only doing the first one. So that's about 5 minutes. And it's a... let me see if I can just find here the description he has. He has a theme for each movement, and the theme for this first one is the theme of God. And the first four chords that you hear are the God theme. And if I were going to play the entire work, you'd hear the theme of God coming out in other movements. But the first movement is called the Glance of the Father. And therefore the theme of God is very appropriate. It is based, this first movement, on the verse, this is my beloved son, in whom I am well pleased. Messiaen is greatly concerned about time, the duration of time, and he sees nothing wrong with playing a chord and just letting it die away, and we're not in any hurry to get on to the next one. There are not very many composers who write in that style today. The only other one that I can think of right off, well, Philip Glass does a lot of contemporary ones. Carl Ruggles, the American composer, wrote that way. He died at the age of 94, having completed 11 pieces. He worked very slowly. And the story of Carl Ruggles that I always enjoy is that Charles Ives, his good friend, went to see him, and Carl Ruggles was seated at his piano and was playing a very complex dissonant chord. Played it, and Ives opened the door and saw him and didn't want to bother him, so he waited, and the chord died away, was struck again and again and again. Finally, after standing there for 45 minutes, Charles Ives went up to Carl Ruggles and said, Carl, excuse me, but... what are you doing? And he said, this chord, I want to see if it wears well. And he was very, he meant it. He was, and that's the way he approached it. Well, Messiaen does the same thing. He wants to know that the chords not so much wear well, but that they have a chance to sound. So we're not in any hurry when we listen to Messiaen. Some pieces of Messiaen are so fast, it's unbelievable. I mean, in about 2 minutes, you have about 4 million notes. And then there are other pieces like this one in which the glance of the Father must feel eternal.
I suppose everyone should play a little war horse on every program, so we end with a little Chopin Polonaise.